Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty lady.
Taylor is on assignment at the moment. She will hopefully join us in a little bit. But I think the switched on, Mia, has extra significance today during this weather.
We may need First Coast Lighting. hopefully we don't, because I think all of the problems from this morning, shout out to the drill and Jaguars today and the wonderful folks at JEA, who I'm assuming were able to turn the power back on. There was a tree that went down. So if you're just turning on the Superstation, you tried to listen this morning, I know like I did, and looking around like, is my car messed up? And then I got home, I tried the app. The app wasn't working. I tried my computer, and I was like, is this me? Am I being punked? Is this April Fool's Day 10 days later? But yes, there was a tree that fell down, knocked out part of our power grid. All is well. And I believe we are also, for the first time today since the drill at approximately 9:15, Lauren, streaming on our live stream as well. RJ, hopefully we got that up and running. And we do. And
Beautiful.
So if you want to, if you're part of our loyal YouTube chat line, Heligan following, which I know there's plenty of you out there. You guys have been so active in the first 8 shows history of this iteration of Helmets and Heels. So keep it coming, and especially as we – oh, and there it is. Yep, my audio on my computer isn't turned up, but hey, at least the audio on the live stream is working. Especially the chat line I know will be lighting up there and on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures as we discuss – 24 hours later, Lauren, Josh Allen officially inked for 5 more years with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, by the way, I think it's pretty impressive with technology that you can still broadcast over the airwaves even if the power does go out. Like, the lights may not be on, but you can still have a signal.
Oh,
it's pretty
yeah.
impressive.
Yes.
But
well, yes. That was honestly, like, it was funny. Like, when I was told exactly what happened, like, all the scenarios keep running through my mind. And I'm like, okay, well, in theory, we could just straight live stream. I'm like, oh, we won't have commercials, which like isn't great, but at least we'll have content. And I was like trying to like run through in my brain. And then ultimately I was like, well, if we have literally no power to the refrigerator, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what else I can do outside of here's my phone. Like, let's try to do that or StreamYard or something.
Well, like you said, we're back up and running. So yes, yesterday, Josh Allen, after inking his deal, 5 years, $150 million with 88 of that guaranteed. He did meet with the media and started by thanking everyone for showing up on such short notice. Mia, you've obviously dealt with Josh Allen for many years now. I've dealt with Josh Allen for many years now. One of my favorite moments is back during COVID when we still had the virtual media availability. And at the end of every single time he met with the media, he would literally go through and read each person's name that was on the screen. And there was at one point in time, my camera, I had finally turned it off because we were done, but my name was still up there. And he's like, Lauren, is Lauren there? And Amanda Holt from Jags PR is like, yes, she's there. And he's like, hey, Lauren. So I had to turn my camera back on, like, hey, Josh, it's okay. You can sign off now. But he has always been, obviously, a media darling, but also a really, really good football player. And I think Trent Baalke, like we talked about yesterday, he may not have arrived at the deal the way everyone would have liked. But the fact that Josh Allen is a key piece of this team and hopefully a Super Bowl winning team, as he mentioned yesterday, that is important for this city.
Yes, and to just reiterate what I said yesterday, I think for the Trent Baalke side of this, this was necessary to put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to say that the Jaguars are going to develop and re-sign their own, you had to do it for a guy who has done everything right, who has the single season record for sacks in franchise history. He, as he noted yesterday, is 10 sacks away from the all-time franchise record.
He better get there.
You literally can't let that guy walk out the door. Yeah. And
nowhere was he ever going to. That's
right.
The thing. That's why Trent Baalke said Josh will be a Jaguar. We just didn't know at the time that Josh didn't know that.
RJ, do you have that soundbite hand though? No. You're thinking the soundbite we're gonna play. I want you to. Oh, there we go. He's ready. I wanted to play it yesterday, just as like almost like a saucy nug.
Yeah.
I think we need to add it to the Helmets and Heels database. Because it's just. Whenever we reference Josh will be a Jaguar. RJ, what do we play? Oh, he's still loading it. All right, the technology.
He's got work to do.
We're still working on. That's okay.
But we are going to play a soundbite from Josh Allen yesterday. Not all of them, but one in particular that I really like, and it's when Josh Allen was asked about the rest of the defensive front, and I really liked one thing he said about Eric Armstead. You really liked one thing he said about his position availability. So let's hear that.
Oh,
Eric Armstead.
Now we got Eric Armstead. Sorry about that. I thought RJ had something else ready. Again, we're still getting our feet under us. The power is back on. Go ahead, RJ. Ignore me.
Eric Armstead, who I'm in awe about. I'm excited for him. I'm excited. He's going to be a great asset to this team. Can't wait to get to work with him. Can't wait to rush with him and against him to get to the quarterback. And it's going to push me to have that sense of urgency. And I'm excited for that.
Yeah, and I think the reason that I really like that cut is about Eric Armstead when Josh said, I'm in awe of him. You don't usually get a player who is Josh Allen's caliber, who is one of the best in the league the last 2 years at getting after the quarterback. And we all know how important that is if you're trying to win football games. You don't usually have a guy like that say that about another player. And so for Josh to be, as he said multiple times yesterday, humble and emotional, but for him to say that about Eric, I don't know if this city is as excited yet, Mia, as they should be for Eric Armstead and how much he's going to bring to that defensive front.
Yeah, Josh will be a Jaguar.
There it is. There it is. Hey, listen.
This is what Mia's been waiting for 24 hours.
Yes, we're still waiting for the bells and whistles. Look, this show is a work in progress, and we're A-okay with that. But yes, I think that what's so fascinating is to pair a couple things together. I liked how when we had, which is crazy to think it was a week ago today, we had Foye Aluikun in studio. Thankfully, yes. The power was working that day. I did think about that as well this morning. But Foye stressed how he didn't want to be Instagram messaging Eric Armstead. He wanted to meet him for the first time. And I think, Josh has a similar way about him. He does things the right way. He wants to meet people where they are. I haven't met Eric Armstead yet, but we get that vibe. And I'm not trying to say that the Jaguars are first team all human beings, and therefore that's going to translate to first team all defense, first team all offense, whatever you want to say.
Right.
But I think that the personalities are very similar on this team. And I think that bodes well as you're trying to bring that defense together. Still, I understand it's year three of Doug Peterson and you're still bringing in pieces from the outside as you're trying to bring all those pieces together and find some cohesiveness.
It's funny, Mia, for a long time, this fan base was sick and tired of the quote unquote choir boys being drafted or being brought in as free agents because they thought that you can't be both a good person and a good football player because other GMs had a way of selecting players based off of their character, maybe more so than their on-field performance. Now, I think ever since Calais Campbell arrived to Jacksonville, everybody has kind of quieted down about that because they realize that you can be a Walter Payton Man of the Year award winner and you can be a guy who opposing quarterbacks are terrified to face.
Right, and I think that what's so unfortunate is Calais Campbell won the Walter Payton Man of the Year award and then was dealt a month later. And then Dave Caldwell went out and drafted 12 choir boys, for lack of a better term, or at least that's what people were saying back then. But I do think because Trent Baalke arrived in the building shortly before the Calais Campbell trade, I do think the two things do kind of coincide in terms of getting good people in the building and the effort to do that. And if you want to attribute it to the aftermath of Jalen Ramsey's departure,
right,
the aftermath of Yannick Ngakoue fighting with the owner's son online, go ahead, feel free. And I know many of you driving around right now are saying, why are they blabbering on about character? We just want to win football games. Well, it just so happens, I'd like to think these are pretty high character guys that are also going to win you football games. And that is something this franchise hasn't had outside of Calais Campbell in quite some time.
Yeah, and that's the thing is everyone being focused on winning the division to start and then, of course, going farther in the postseason than they did 2 years ago. That is a goal that I think is going to be at the forefront of almost every conversation that we have with players throughout the next few months leading up to the season and throughout the season because they now realize some of them had only known losing, right? Mm-hmm. Unless they were here in 2017, and that's very few and far between. Cam Robinson, Tyler Shatley, Dewan Smoot, maybe?
Which those last two aren't on the roster right now.
So, yeah. There's those guys who experienced one season of winning, and then everybody who came after that only knows the losing. And then all of a sudden, there was the 1 year in the playoffs. And so I think some of them might have thought, okay, that's going to be easy now that Doug Peterson's our head coach. We'll be in the playoffs every year. He's taken the Eagles to the playoffs multiple times, won the Super Bowl. And then last year was a complete and total wake-up call. Even their head coach said, I think some of them were reading their press clippings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I think they are going to be absolutely fueled by, we know now most of them know what it takes to make the postseason from two seasons ago, and they know exactly where they fell off the cliff last season.
RJ, if you could get ready, clip number 7 from yesterday's press conference, because I think we can tie a couple other things together. To your point, Lauren, that's the reason Mitch Morse was brought in. That's the reason Eric Armstead was brought in, because Doug Peterson admitted he felt like there weren't enough guys in that locker room that had multiple years of postseason experience under their belt. It was just that one euphoric run in 2022 for the bulk of the roster, and thus they didn't know how to handle success and adversity when it struck 1 year later.
And by the way, Gabe Davis and Devin Duvernay, too.
Yes, who have both played in multiple postseasons, and so it's important to note, basically, and Darnell Savage with the Packers.
Yes.
Every guy,
I forget that they actually went to the postseason.
And Ronald Darby won a Super Bowl. Like, also every true. Guy they brought in has been to the postseason multiple times over. And I think that the thought is that that energy will seep into guys who have already been there once before, are emerging leaders, or are leaders like Josh Allen, and in turn can inspire that next group akin to one Trayvon Walker.
Trayvon called me and he said he had a day off, but he went to go work out, you know, because that motivated him. Like, seeing what I got motivated him. So it's like, you know, to have a guy like Trayvon keep getting better and better and better each year, it's only going to make me want to have to get better, because I got to be the best player on his team. So I'm always competing with him. He knows that.
I got to be the best player on this team. And that's someone who knows that, hey, if I'm going to be paid this much money, again, I need to put my money where my mouth is. And so I think that's where the train of thought is trending in the right direction. And, of course, great to hear that Trayvon was inspired by, hey, if Josh got the bag, now I have to start working so I get the bag as well. The other part of the conversation regarding Eric Armstead and Ryan Nielsen and the new defense that I want to get into, we will talk about the situation regarding Josh and OTAs, although I don't think, honestly.
It's not a situation.
It's not a situation. OTAs are voluntary. As John Shipley noted on Jaguars Today, he didn't go last year and he had the best year of his career. Like, if you're the Jags, you're telling him, please go back to Arizona. Do whatever you did last year, because we need that again. And, of course, he needs it to hit certain incentives, as the contract specifics noted when Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk released that 2 days ago, or yesterday, I should say. It's all blending together. But the point I want to make is regarding a quote that kind of got, I don't even know if it's in the bite, RJ. And so it'll in the clip that Gibby put together, it would be number 9 in theory. But I'm very curious if it even makes the cut, because it was almost like kind of snuck in there. I was the only reporter at the press conference who tweeted it out. And then as we're all sitting there kind of debriefing after Josh had left, somebody said, hey, did you hear what he said about our best player needs to be playing, you know, being able to slide inside?
First and foremost, you got to see how the lineup's going to be. I think that's important. You know, you brought him here to play a lot. You just re-signed me to play a lot. Trayvon just come off a 10-sack season, who's only progressing. We have Roy, we have Deham, we have Adam. We just signed Jeremiah back. So you see the tools and the pieces that we have.
So, yeah, didn't even get to it. Didn't even get to it. So I will continue.
That's on purpose for people who don't understand radio
right.
world. You don't want your sound bites to be anywhere past about like 20 to 30 seconds, because they'd take too long.
But that's literally like how this got snuck in. So after he says how he signed Jeremiah Ledbetter back, and this, that, and the other, he says, you see the tools and the pieces that we have. And so it's just, first of all, how are we going to rotate that? How are we going to do that? What are we asking everybody to do? Then going out there, once we have that front of, this is where what we're looking at. I know Coach Nielsen is a defensive line guy. If you want your best player to rotate inside, I've shown that I can play 3-tech on a guard. Everybody is good in the National Football League, but you know what I mean? Trayvon can go inside. Eric can go inside and outside. Roy has some outside stuff. So we can rotate and see where everybody best fits.
I think that Ryan Nielsen, like I said yesterday, somewhere in Jacksonville, he's smiling because he knows he has one of his key pieces locked up now for several more years, and 5 more years at least. But I think, Mia, people get so locked into, well, the Jaguars can't draft an edge rusher at 17 because that person's not going to start. That's a very, and I think like that sometimes too, that's a very linear way of thinking. But there are so many different ways that you can go about it and moving those pieces around. So, yeah, I think this defensive front will be, what, maybe 3 times better than it was a year ago?
The hope is, yes.
That's what looking at the pieces from a season ago with Devon Hamilton struggling with the illness and having to miss so many games, with the way Foley Fatu-Kasi played – Roy Robertson-Harris was fine.
Yeah.
Not great, he wasn't terrible.
He wasn't what he was the last six games of 2022.
Right. And so now you add Eric Armstead and you have Devon Hamilton, you assume fully healthy and more motivated, I would guess, Roy Robertson-Harris, because he wants to get back to the postseason too. I think they're going to be a lot better than the defensive front we saw a year ago. And the question is, how many more sacks, of course, does that lead to? And like Taylor always mentions, quarterback pressures as well. If you're getting a lot of quarterback pressures, those are eventually going to lead to sacks as well. Because you have to have a higher production if you want to be one of the best teams in the NFL.
And it's also important to note with, you know, I know Demetrius Harvey is now kind of backed off of, he had Jared Verse in this week, his mock draft this week. I had him 2 weeks ago. Mia's mock draft 1.0, still available on 1010XL.com. I think it's important to note with all the discussion surrounding Ryan Nielsen, he needs a press man corner. The coverage in the back end needs to be sound. Well, the coverage in the back end, yes, you want it to be top tier, but if you're getting pressure up front, then you afford your secondary a couple seconds of leeway. Because if you're getting to the quarterback in 4 seconds, 5 seconds, then they don't have to cover that long. And so that's where it's a yin and a yang, and it has to go hand in hand. And that's why, to the text line's point, thank you to 368 for this, with the extra $13 million that the Jaguars will now reportedly save, according to the terms of Josh Allen's contract, because he won't play on the tag, would they make any moves? We can save the Brandon Ayuk conversation for another day. I haven't heard anything. Haven't heard any moves of T. Higgins. I've seen plenty of you tweeting at me about that. I have heard nothing about that in 3 weeks. Where I look at that $13 million and I say I know what the plan is, it's for that second or third, I guess, wave of free agency after the NFL draft. That is for the Bud Duprees of the world. That is for, dare I say, and again, he met with the Jaguars last year. I know he's coming off an injury. I don't know this year. Just throwing the name out there, Yannick Ngakoue. That wave of guys, if the Jaguars can't get an edge in the NFL draft, if they don't go edge in the first round, it's very clear to me, and hearing Josh's comments about the rotation and needing more guys and trying to keep guys fresh and keep the opposition on its heels by putting guys in multiple positions, that's where it says to me they are not done with that room. Do not think for a second they are done with that room. And so whether it is, hey, Jared Verse presents himself at 17, or you look up at 96 and you need a corner still, or hopefully they've addressed it before then, but if they still need a corner because they go up for a wide receiver, let's say, which may or may not be Mia's mock draft 3.0, and so they have to draft the corner at 96. Now you get to 114. The depth isn't there in that edge class, but you know you have two bona fide starters at the wide receiver and corner position that you come away with, so you say, you know what? Okay, we'll go call Bud Dupree. We had him on speed dial all along.
And that is going to be fun to watch, as is the NFL draft, which comes up in just a few weeks from now. It'll be 2 weeks from today, right?
Man, yeah,
time
two weeks
is
from
flying
today.
By. So, yeah, you can check out more of Mia's mock drafts on 1010XL.com. But we are going to continue our countdown to the NFL draft. Coming up next, the hated Titans. We don't hate this guy. We just hate the Titans. Blaine Bishop will join us and predict who he thinks the Titans will be targeting with their selection. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Girls just want to talk football.
Helmets and Heels.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010XL.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
You better believe in Chad.
The last time I spoke with this next individual and his 104.5 contemporaries, 104.5 The Zone, of course, up in Nashville, Blaine Bishop and company told me, you know, it's either going to be Derrick Henry's swan song in this 2023 finale or the Jaguars will win by 30. As we all know, it was the former. There were also rumblings in the press conference that day of Mike Vrabel's departure, which has since come to pass. Blaine Bishop joining us now on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Man, oh, man, has a lot happened in the last 4 months, my friend.
Oh, man, time flies, man, with the NFL. So it's been a unique time, but the NFL dominates even in the off season, and it's always fun and new excitement new coaching staff with the Titans and new players getting signed. So it's the dawn of a new era there in Tennessee with the Titans.
Yes. Before we ask you where you believe Brian Callahan and company may be leaning with that seventh overall pick, his first as the head coach of the Titans, Blaine, first and foremost, how are you? Welcome back into 1010XL and making your maiden voyage on Helmets and Heels. And I also have to start big picture with Brian Callahan, with the decision to part ways with Mike Vrabel. Big picture, how have you seen this franchise change over the last 4 months with a new head coach?
I'm going to address it like this. I thought Mike Vrabel was a good coach. But I had been saying, and I was the only person here in the state of Tennessee saying, Mike Vrabel was on the hot seat. And it was because I was operating. He was not operating in collaboration with the new GM. There were leaks of that he wasn't qualified, the GM, which had to come from Vrabel, and that he should have been an assistant and not a GM. And that's during our season. That all kind of transpired when he got inducted into the New England Hall of Fame there. And all that noise from New England came about. Then, oh, he's going to be the next coach there. And then they weren't winning. And then he was a major cog in, if not all the cog in, making all the decisions last year. And the Dillard signing was all him. And once I found that out, I thought he was on the hot seat because Dillard signing wrecked the entire offensive line. If he was even competent enough to be the starter and do a halfway decent job, the Titans would have been a little bit, okay, Vrabel is a good, solid, average coach in my mind. So I said that, and everybody thought I was crazy. I like Vrabel. I don't take things personal. I want the Titans to win. That's what I do take personal. And I want them to win a Super Bowl. And I want to say I was, you know, part of that in a different way than as a player. So I thought his treatment of players, he had favorites. You don't ever show your hand as favorites. We are all parents, and you do not let the kids know which one is your favorite. Well, he did, and he does. And so that continued. He would pull players. This is not college. So I said, I think he'll be a great college coach. He would pull a player for getting beat for a touchdown. I don't care how many reps we do that. Now you start messing with the mental psyche of the actual player. You don't have a five-star sitting on the bench. There's a reason why the guy's the backup. You got another okay player who's probably on minimum salary as an NFL player. He did it routinely. But he didn't do it to the guys that he liked. So these are things I felt like could divide the locker room. That's just an example. And so as time went on, I felt like his words got stale with the players. And eventually it did. And the organization, in my mind, made the absolute right decision. It's the dawn of a new era, and this is not the time I played in 1999 and 2000 with one left, one right, a phenomenal player with Derrick Henry. But that's not the only way you can skin a cat. So when you get in games where you get behind, you have no shot of winning the game. This now is a passing league, and you can use the pass to set up the run, or you can use your sharp passing game when you don't have competent enough. When I say competent, I'm like athletic enough to hold up on the front offensive line. You still don't have to run the football. So it was just like running into darkness. And in my evaluation of the team continued, and I thought Amy Adams Strunk did a superb job in her decision and processing and hired someone I hope that can be, don't know much about Callahan, be a good coach and coaching staff. They are right now giving us so much information behind the scenes that we have never had, I don't think, with any coach that's ever coached the Tennessee Titans since I left. So, it's been refreshing, to say the least. And I don't think anyone's intimidated asking questions at a presser. I think they feel, wow, this is different. We haven't seen this. So hopefully that translates into some players, but they're in a rebuild mode. So, you know, hopefully this season they'll be, in a lot of games and, you know, fighting maybe at the end for a playoff spot. But, after 1 year and then I think next year, then they'll be in the right spot. With the collaboration of all the people in the front office with the head coach as well as the coaching staff. It was do it my way or the highway with Vrabel.
Blaine, that's good insight because from our perspective here in Jacksonville, we all thought Vrabel was a really good coach, but obviously
he is.
Yeah, but didn't know kind of some of those ins and outs that you were just referring to. All right, we of course have to ask you about Calvin Ridley. Will Levis now gets to throw to DeAndre Hopkins and Ridley. When that contract came out, what did you think?
I was stunned. I didn't even know they were even talking to Calvin Ridley. Had no clue. No one did. Not at all. That was on the wraps. And then it came to fruition for us sitting in the media is that he contacted Amos Strunk and said, I think they made an adjustment. I think they couldn't get a player they thought they wanted and probably at a different position. And they had an allotment of money and they said, let's go for it. And someone on the staff, Holtz, had a relationship with Ridley, probably gave them great insight of who he was and not just on the field. And it's all about people and people skills and relationships. And I think that put them over the top and they were going to do what they could to get a playmaker and see if Will Levis can be a really good quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah, Blaine, which I think another offensive move, which the big one being Derrick Henry leaving, but being replaced by Tony Pollard, who I personally am a big fan of Pollard. So it's one of those things where you've noticed him the last couple years really start to ramp up his play on the football field. So what were the feelings with that, the goodbye to Derrick, but the hello to Tony?
Well, it was a great sayonara for Henry. He's, you know, great player, great person, great human being, all those things. And it's unfortunate. You know, I'm a fan of the game as well, an evaluator. But it was time to turn the page. And I had no idea they were going to go for turn five. Finally, they signed Pollard first. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, whoa, okay. So I think they were trying to be intentional there, if I was guessing, because they wanted the fans to, I guess, move on from Henry, who was a legendary player and probably a Hall of Fame player. So that's always tough from a fan perspective because you're also trying to get fans in the stands, and this is a business. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting, but it shows you where they were going. They wanted multifaceted type running backs. So they have Spears there from Tulane last year, who's kind of a little dynamo who can do a little bit of everything really well in between the tackles. So they got two of those guys now. That's kind of how I view it, just in case one gets banged up because they are on a smaller side. It's going to be an offensive-driven, you know, team. So, yeah, I'm excited. Explosive players that are dynamic in open space. I think I can't recall the last player we had someone like that on our team, let alone Ridley, too, with his speed.
Blaine Bishop is our guest, the former Tennessee Titan, four-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro, turned co-host of the Blaine and Mickey Show, which you get 1 to 3 p.m. Central Time, 2 to 4 Eastern on 104.5 The Zone. Blaine, we've arrived at that fun part of this interview. With the 7th overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, Blaine Bishop believes that the Tennessee Titans are leaning towards selecting...
That's always conflicting how you put that. Blaine Bishop, me, or do I think what the team will do?
You can give us both. Leaning. We will take both. We would love to hear where the team is leaning, but we also, hey, you're a former Titan. You bleed that other type of blue color that we won't talk about here in Jacksonville.
Of course.
Where do you feel the team is leaning versus where you would go?
Well, I have to say this, the Titans still haven't addressed tackle. So you would assume that it will be the first tackle that's available when they pick. Now, who that will be, I have no idea. I'm not evaluating drafts. All this good. They could divert and go in a different direction because actually it's a deep draft at offensive line, at offensive tackle, and may be able to get another position with that pick. Now, so I think they're going to go offensive tackle. But if they don't, I don't know how they've graded the players. If they can't get the top two tackles for whatever reason, so they're not available, I think they will adjust and go either wide receiver or defensive edge rusher. Which a lot of people here will be shocked. But I think if you can get the number one pass rusher and you still only have Landry and Arden Key, and who's more of a rotational player when he's effective, in my opinion. That's kind of where I think they will go. Naturally, the fans here want Brock Bowers with that pick at 7. I don't know what the heck they're doing there, but Brock Bowers can't, as much as I love him as a player, you know, he'd be nullified by staying and blocking a lot for Will Levis, helping him out. So I think they got to go tackle or edge if I was making a guess.
Yes, after, as you noted, the misstep by Mike Vrabel to bring in a free agent, can the Titans finally fortify the turnstile they've had on the edge to go along on that left side with Peter Skoronski? Blaine Bishop of 104.5 The Zone, thank you so much for joining us on Helmets and Heels and, of course, on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, my friend.
Anytime, ladies.
There he goes. And again, Blaine and Mickey, 1-3 Central Time. If you ever find yourself up in Nashville or looking for insight on those Titans, they do a pretty darn good job at 104.5 The Zone. I feel like as we've counted down to 17, Lauren and Taylor, a lot of the stations and media conglomerates that when Taylor and I set out to develop the 1010XL multimedia department, we looked at them and we were like, oh, they're doing it right. Mm-hmm. And as much as we will never give the Tennessee Titans credits for anything, 104.5 The Zone, very good media conglomerate.
There you have it. All right. We have by the way, hello, Taylor.
Hello. I'm here.
I was going to say, we have to say hello to Taylor. Taylor made it. But also, we have to recap our NFL draft countdown. We will do that when we return on 1010XL on 2.5 FM.
Sports-loving ladies.
Helmets and heels.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010XL.
Stapleton for you on this rainy Thursday. All right, just a few minutes here to recap our NFL draft countdown thus far. We had the Bears take Caleb Williams, Commanders take Jaden Daniels, Patriots Drake May. Then those were the first three fairly obvious. Then we started asking more about what they're targeting. The Cardinals might trade back or take Marvin Harrison Jr. The Chargers trade back or take an offensive tackle like Joe Alt. The Giants probably a receiver like Malik Nabers. Again, they could trade back or they could take a quarterback. There's also that thought out there. The Titans, as we just talked to Blaine Bishop, he believes offensive tackle or edge. In a lot of mocks, you do see offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Brock Bowers. If you're trying to go all in for Will Levis and you believe he's your franchise quarterback, which I don't think that, but that's obviously what they believe in Nashville, you certainly could add another weapon in Brock.
Brock is so interesting in this draft because not only like in the amount,
the range
that you see him being mocked, but also every team I feel like that I've talked to personally already that we've talked to, and then ones that like if you have friends or whatever that are media or fans of those teams, everybody's like, man, I love him so much, but I don't know if I can justify picking him at this spot.
Which is
we heard it yesterday. He's like, he may be Travis Kelce, but I don't know if it's worth it picking him at 6. And like every team is saying that. Like the Bears are saying the same thing at 9.
Part of that I want to blame. Sorry, Arthur Smith. Like it's on you, my friend. Like the terrorist that was on the Atlanta Falcons, which we will talk to the other Myles Garrett of Fox 5 Atlanta tomorrow to see what the Falcons are thinking at 8. But
if we just start saying Myles Garrett's joining us tomorrow,
yeah,
because we have Foye Aluakin, people probably would think it's Myles
Garrett. Listen, that'll get people tuning in. But if not for Arthur Smith keeping Kyle Pitts in witness protection program and thus people questioning the thought of a tight end going that high at number 4 that year in the NFL draft, I don't think we would be having nearly as nuanced a conversation as we are regarding Brock Bowers and the value of a rookie tight end contract in the first round versus if you're able to take and get value later on. Because, I mean, once upon a time, TJ Hockenson went 8th right after Josh Allen in the 2019 NFL draft. He unfortunately was drafted to a Detroit Lions team that was coached by Matt Patricia and was rebuilding throughout the duration of his time there. But now when you look at his production with the Minnesota Vikings, you're like, okay, I see first-round pick potential there. So maybe even if Brock Bowers isn't Kelce, but he's Hockenson on the Vikings, I mean, if you're the Titans – I think they need to protect Will Levis because it has been a turnstile. Clearly hearing from Blaine Bishop that Mike Vrabel was instrumental in Andre Dillard's signing and saying, well, we're just going to basically come up with like a Band-Aid fix.
Yeah.
It's very clear that people want a foundational pillar at the left and right tackle position in Tennessee. And obviously, because they've run the ball and played great defense, that's been their mantra for so long. How can you not have a good offensive line? At the same time, some juice – maybe that gets more eyeballs mm-hmm. on the product up in Nashville.
You mentioned juice. As most people know by now, O.J. Simpson passed away yesterday at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer. We will get to more on that in a little bit, but just wanted to, since you mentioned juice, I just had to at least mention that.
Did you guys know, by the way, he had cancer?
I had no idea.
I did not either.
And I think nowadays, like with Jimmy Buffett, when Jimmy Buffett passed away, I'm a big Jimmy Buffett fan. I didn't know he had cancer either. Mm-hmm. I'm appreciative of people who are able to go through that type of stuff and
not make it a public opinion. They don't want
people to be up, whether it's in their business or just so worried about them that, you know, they're already worried they're going to pass away before they even do. Like, there's just so many things that I feel like crazy people do. And so I can fully respect that they want to fight the battle in privacy. And then, of course, the family asks for privacy now, too.
Yeah, absolutely. We will continue with that conversation regarding O.J. Simpson. What is his legacy? Because I know that's been hotly debated on Twitter this morning. We noted, and Dylan Denmark and RJ pointed out, the last video he posted was a Super Bowl video of him in a Debo Samuel jersey.
I'm so happy.
We'll also get into some other news of the day, including Scott Drew of Baylor passes on the Kentucky job, a swing and a miss for the Wildcats. What comes next to find the successor to John Calipari, who, by the way, noted he met with the team in Arkansas yesterday. There is no team.
Yeah, they are running for the hills. By the way, as you've heard in our Masters updates, Bryson DeChambeau leads all golfers up there in Augusta at 3 under. So a live guy right now is leading. We'll be back on Tension XL on 2.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010 XL.
What you know about love? You said our love wouldn't be. You said you were my girlfriend. Some girl you turned out to be.
I got to go see this guy, Donovan Frankenreiter, at Underbelly not too long ago. It was super fun. And Taylor, I know I asked you on air when we were on Helmets and Heels at night if you'd ever been to Underbelly, and you said yes. And
yeah,
that was my first time there. I just discovered it. Absolutely loved it. All right, let's get your take, Taylor, since you had to miss the very beginning of the show on Josh Allen's press conference yesterday.
Yeah. I loved it. I think that seeing that emotion out of a player, because we talk about it a lot, and in the fact of, we did it even with Calvin, they want to be here, and it's always kind of like, okay, sure. They want the money at the end of the day, but you really did feel emotion in Josh of like, yes, he got a payday, so I'm sure he's pumped about that, but it also seemed like he genuinely was like, I started my NFL career here, and I want to finish my NFL career here, and we see that genuine trait of Josh through the press conferences and through other interactions with the media and stuff like that. And I know you had like the situation with the, hey, Lauren, like that type of thing. And it's just, those are the little moments that, so when you see that side of a player, you already love it and already love that, the human side of it. But then you get to this and you have a season the way he did. And I was reading the text line yesterday and our Twitter, because we had our question of the day yesterday of what was your favorite Josh Allen moment, and we went through some of those yesterday, but some of the comments just genuinely were making me laugh, like the negative ones of he's the most inconsistent. One of them said he's the most inconsistent player that we in Jags history, and that blew my mind.
Sir, that's quite a long list. I don't think you can quantify by putting him at the top of it.
I was genuinely confused by that statement, because I was like, even if, like, first of all, to count on someone getting 17 sacks every season isn't a normal, like, no, not many players hit that mark or even close to that mark in consecutive seasons, especially not their entire career. But he's always been that person who has, and this is with teams that have been disasters around him. So, and that's what I think a lot of people on the years where maybe you didn't get the production out of Josh Allen, and I spoke on it many times, like, you want, last season, I was like, you're going to need to see this next jump out of Josh Allen to really know what he's worth. And you saw it. You saw it, he's capable of doing it, and you know he's capable of doing it aside people who give him a little bit of help where he's not having to do all of it. And so, that's something. But yeah, I think that you could tell he was excited. You can tell. I know one of the things Mia mentioned was the position about having the best player inside. That was interesting to me. And your tweet was the only one I really saw even talking about it. So
I was literally like, I just heard it and I was like, huh. That's interesting, and yeah. I like tweeted it out, and then again we like had to debrief about it later because yeah. they were like, "Wait, did he really say that?" I'm like,
"So what are your what were your thoughts on that initially pre-debrief
when he first said it?" Because I saw some people and a couple of you on the text line noted this too, that you felt like it was almost as if it was a slight against Mike Caldwell mm-hmm. that the best player, i.e., either Josh or Trayvon, wasn't going inside more. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was the case. I think it was a bigger picture discussion of Ryan Nielsen will scheme us up. It's just. And this is no knock on Mike Caldwell because Todd Washington did this too, where you are our left outside linebacker. You are our three technique. You play here. Yeah. And that is your role, and that's what you do. And we've seen it with Ryan Nielsen both in Atlanta and New Orleans. He's got guys lined
everywhere.
Up all over the place, yeah. and he keeps bodies fresh. And so that's why our conversation in the 12 o'clock hour was regarding is the thought of an edge rusher at 17 or 48 dead with the extension to Josh Allen, to which I say absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And even if you opt for the corner wide receiver or interior defensive line or whatever route you go, I think they have Bud Dupree on speed dial, personally, okay. because I think if they don't get the edge rusher they want, they will say, okay, we'll tap back into that third wave of free agency and go get a veteran.
I do think Josh Allen might have been not intentionally saying anything bad between the lines about Fully Fatakasi, mm-hmm. but that's more what I took away from it is we have more talent now on this defensive front. And yes, with our new defensive coordinator, we're going to be able to mix it up. But it's also because we have a guy like Eric Armstead who might be able to play outside. Yeah. And I don't think Fully Fatakasi
could have played outside.
Yeah. Quick Masters update. 5 guys now at 3 under. Oh. So DeChambeau no longer atop the leaderboard himself. Danny Willett, former Masters champ in 2016, one of those 5. So we'll keep you updated when it comes to that. All right, Mia, you asked the question that, like you said, has been hotly debated on Twitter, and that would be, what is the legacy of O.J. Simpson? From an older person's perspective, as far as on this show, not older in general, but I remember the Bronco chase. I remember being at a family reunion.
30 years ago this year, by the way.
30 years ago. I remember watching that. And I remember listening to all the adults talk about how wild that was because he was such a good football player. That's my kind of first memory of OJ, not from being a football player, but mm-hmm. from the chase. And then, of course, we all know the acquittal, the very famous acquittal, and the fact that the glove didn't fit and everything like that. So for me, my legacy is definitely the police chasing this guy who it seemed untouchable at one point in time in his life.
The YouTube chat line, as expected, as I noted right off the top of the show, which apologies that there was no YouTube stream for Jaguars today or the end of the drill. Again, if you're just turning on 1010 for the first time today, we had some electrical issues in the building, but we are back up on the air and running, and the YouTube chat line is on fire in a good way. Lil Big Man, don't let OJ is dead distract you from 2,000 yards in a single season.
Right, exactly. I mean, he was a phenomenal football player. It's just when you get away from, or I should say, because it was so long ago mm-hmm. and all the other stuff was so public.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that his ex-wife and her husband were killed, or boyfriend were killed.
Or pool boy.
Right.
Friend,
like,
yes.
Sure. Like, there was such obvious guilt, even if the courtroom mm-hmm. didn't find that, because he paid excellent lawyers and things like that. But I think, to me, yes, eventually, like, for instance, I'll bring it to a more recent player, Draymond Green, and not that he has any sort of court issues. Draymond Green's legacy will always be the ejections and the fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, he has won multiple NBA championships.
But was that OJ's mantra on the football field?
Killer?
Yeah, like he wasn't like that. I'm not old enough.
Well, I definitely was.
Him play, but like it didn't come across as like let's say, you know, Derrick Henry with the bulldozer. Like, was O.J. Simpson like a bulldozer?
I think his nickname was Juice because he was so fast.
Correct. Mm-hmm. If anything,
why he's fast in the Broncos.
A prequel to the modern running back that we were just discussing with Blaine Bishop of 104.5 The Zone.
Yeah.
Having that quick burst, having that speed in the open field, mm-hmm. that, as he said, Tennessee hasn't had a running back like that in eons.
Yeah.
And I think that OJ was the precursor in a lot of ways to that. And so I don't think it was like a smash mouth. Like Draymond, and the reason I bring this up is if we're to make the Draymond, like, what was your style of play and then your off the court antics, like, Draymond's style of play is banging on the boards, mm-hmm. you know, like physicality and getting rebounds.
Yeah.
And so that's where, again, we're not trying to compare a guy who may or may not have murdered people to a guy who just gets ejected for games and yells at refs and players.
Yeah.
But get suspended too.
But it is important to note that, like, your off the field actions can reflect and overshadow what you did on the court or on the field.
And it's a shame. He's obviously, OJ's not the only example of that. We have, even in recent history, what is Deshaun Watson always going to be in
the future?
Because the way he started his career, it looked like he was going to be one of those top quarterbacks. And because of his off-field antics, it almost feels like it halted a lot of that. But when it comes to, it's a shame that when you go back, because when you do look at OJ's numbers and what he was able to do, when it comes to, obviously, that 2,000-yard rushing season, but even around that, all of the years around that, hitting 15 and 18 and 16 touchdowns and 14 touchdowns. And it sucks that, especially for someone like me who was born in 90, all I know, like my whole first 10 years of my life, because that happened 94, 95, 96, was like in the midst of all of the trial and all of that stuff going on. So that is like my first memories and my most like vivid memories of just like hearing about the trial and hearing about the Bronco and hearing about that. And at that time, people were not talking about his football because they were like, okay, well, he's not a very good person if this is true, if this happened. And so it wasn't something that was addressed. So it wasn't until later in life when you could go back and like, I don't want to say forgotten because it's obviously not forgotten, but got pushed back enough to where people started talking about his ability on the football field a little bit more. But then as soon as that started happening, then all of these documentaries come out showing the trial and showing the court case and the behind the scenes of what was really going on with all of the lawyers and with OJ and is he lying? Is it real? All of that stuff. So the moment that you felt like you started seeing a little bit more of the football, again, you got reminded of the whole, all of the other off the field stuff. So it's a shame almost, because it's a shame, obviously, with the whole situation that happened, but that you can't, most people can't just talk about OJ Simpson as a football player.
That's correct. And by the way, I didn't know this because I'm not connected with anyone in Las Vegas, but apparently in February of 2024, this is according to ABC News, a Las Vegas television station reported that he was undergoing treatment for an unspecified cancer. But then that day, OJ posted a video on Twitter denying rumors that he was in hospice care, but he didn't deny that he was ill.
And interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So Las Vegas, someone obviously from the hospital, I'm going to guess, must have told someone, even though that's totally a violation of HIPAA. But that's my guess, is that somebody told somebody and then they got it to a Las Vegas TV station. But of course, when OJ comes out and says, well, no, that's not necessarily true. He wasn't in hospice care at that point in time, but he, like I said, he didn't deny that he had cancer. But as someone who has lost several people in my lifetime, and most people listening probably have as well, to cancer, it can be such an ugly disease. And I'm at least glad for him that he was able to deal with it out of the public eye and deal with it as a family. All right, let's switch gears to Kentucky basketball, Mia. You have Scott Drew staying at Baylor. So who is going to be the next Kentucky basketball coach?
Yeah, so he just released a statement. In our program, we strive to put Jesus first, then others, then ourselves. We truly believe God has called my family and I to continue our work here at Baylor, surrounded by the best people and community anyone could be blessed to have.
That sounds very much more religious than I would have expected it
Scott Drew is a pretty, he's a man of faith.
Okay.
And obviously he's the mentor to our good friend Matthew Driscoll of UNF so many people there.
Texas is probably a better, Baylor is probably a more, in a better environment for something like that than Lexington, Kentucky is what I would guess, just because of all of the bourbon that exists in Lexington.
He's also 53 years old. Like, I was stunned that John Calipari was 65 and is still coaching and is taking on a new venture, which we could get into that as well. And look, I think Scott Drew is, I don't want to say he's a young or an old 53, because when he took over that Baylor program and the state that it was in, the mess that it was, the mess that that entire athletic program minus the women's basketball team was, it can't be overstated enough. And so I think that he truly believes he's changing lives. And I also think he believes that, I'm 53. Why would I want to literally enter the terror dome that is Big Blue Nation and have to deal with that sort of pushback of, if I'm not getting top five recruits every year, if I'm not going to the Final Four every year, it's the end of the world? Versus at Baylor, he won a national title, the first in their program's history, and everything else is going to be forgotten. And I'm not saying Scott Drew is going to bottom out now because he's got a nice contract extension, assumingly, after these potential discussions with Kentucky. But I do think that he's in a very comfortable spot and he's in a very comfortable part of his life. And so I don't blame him in the least. I also believe what's being reported on Twitter is true, that he may be the first person in history to turn down both the Kentucky and the Louisville job in the same offseason.
What type of coach do you think it's going to take to accept that job.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's literally because of what John Calipari made that job. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back in time, like Tubby Smith was a good coach, but he wasn't out here proclaiming the world of one and done.
Yeah.
And, you know, flashing around, here's my $3 billion in NBA contracts that my guys have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the character that Cal is and was at Kentucky. There also was a layoff that people forget between Tubby, who, you know, Rick Pitino, Tubby, Gillespie, and then it was John Calipari, and John Calipari has been the coach for 15 years.
Yeah.
And so that's why Kentucky fans, it is Camelot again, even if the results in the NCAA tournament haven't showed for it, the standard has been raised. And so, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I don't want to compare it to the Alabama job because the Alabama job is different in that they've actually won multiple national titles in the last 15 years as opposed to just one.
But the pressure is
heavy. And the fan base still has a high standard.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like Florida football, except Florida hasn't won the title in longer than Kentucky hasn't won.
Yeah, but that's actually probably a good analogy.
That's what
But even more pressure built.
Yeah, like from being obviously a Gators fan, but I see all the really fanatical people on social media where I talk to them, and the pressure to win at Florida, I mean, you're on the hot seat if you don't win the first year.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the same as for the Kentucky basketball coach. Hopefully when it comes to Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, they have a bigger picture and they understand that it may not be immediate. Even though their fans will still go crazy, but as long as leadership feels that way, then Kalen DeBoer will have a better chance.
So to answer your question, Taylor, from people I've talked to, like now that Scott Drew said no, and knowing Nate Oates has already said he's out, and not to mention that would have been a $20 million buyout at the University of Alabama, all signs really point to Mark Pope, the head coach of BYU, who was the captain of the 1996 national title team at Kentucky, and would he be willing to go back to the Bluegrass State? He is part of the Church of Latter-day Saints. He has four daughters that I think range in age from like 13 to 20. Are he and his wife willing to leave a very nice area in BYU where, hey, like you make the NCAA tournament, you go to the Big 12 and you have success in that first year, you make the tournament. I know you got bounced in the round of 64, but it feels like you're building something. You were a top 25 team most of the year. Do you really want to give that up to go to Kentucky, which Mark Pope isn't even like a Kentucky guy? Like, he finished his college career there, but he's from Washington State.
Okay.
He started his college basketball career at Washington State. And while I think he bleeds blue in the sense that, yes, that's where he has his degree from, I think he knows the other side of the coin all too well. And so it'll be curious if that's who they go out and get. He's a very level-headed guy. And to whoever takes this job is going to be a stark contrast to Cal, unless Kentucky does the funniest thing ever, and they go out and they hire Rick Pitino. That is the only way that you would just continue the madness. I mean, I've seen T.J. Otzelberger of Iowa State's name floated a time or two. And
Pitino's 71, by the way. And yes, of course, he's still coaching.
He's still coaching.
He's 71.
Yeah. He can't quit, Lauren.
He
loves
it.
He's married at the game.
I'll just the coaching odds right now. So still have Billy Donovan at the top, which we've talked about that one. Tommy Lloyd second, Arizona. Mark Pope behind that, and then Otzelberger behind that. Bruce Pearl, Shaka Smart, and Brad Underwood are the ones behind that.
Yeah. Oh, Brad, that'd be interesting.
I think Shaka Smart's a really good coach.
But I think the whole reason Shaka left Texas was because he was tired of the machine. He was tired of the pressure from boosters and fans. And he said, I'm going to go back to my little old Wisconsin where, you know, if I win, I'm celebrated. And as long as we're above 500, like Marquette fans are like, okay, he's building towards something.
Yeah.
I'm also very proud that we somehow managed to get both O.J. Simpson and Rick Pitino in the same segment in 2024.
Hey, that's what we do. When we come back, I want to get it to the NFL draft. As far as the analysts who've been the most accurate over the last few years, we will get to that and a whole lot more on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
I look up at the television here at 1010XL World Headquarters. I see our friend of the program, Laura Rutledge, who was kind enough to join us last week, leading the Masters studio coverage from the field at Augusta, where play has resumed after a rain interruption slash delay this morning because of those storms that rolled through. I also see my good friend George Kittle, also Kirk Cousins, but George Kittle, which reminded me, ladies, we never got to some of the fun tweets that have been sent via the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures over the last 8 days of us being a daily program. I will read the most recent of them for you now. From the Durham Bulls, good morning. We scored 28 runs in a game. Oh, no, sorry. They scored 20. So here we go. They won 28 to 10. Preface it. They won 28 to 10.
A baseball game.
The Durham Bulls, which are a rival of the Jumbo Shrimp, they're a AAA baseball team. And then they tweeted it out, just another day in the International Football League. Ha 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 ha, because it's the International League is the AAA division, right? Good morning. We've scored 28 in a game as many times as Iowa football did last season.
Ooh, burn.
That, of course, is on the heels of so many of you, especially Tim Reynolds down in Miami and the good folks at The Athletic, who were quick to point out that, yes, Caitlin Clark did score more points by herself this season than the Iowa football program this year and in quite some time. Actually, I believe it was her entire four-year career.
Ooh, yeah, that's no bueno. All right, so transitioning to football then, Taylor, when we talk about NFL draft, of course, we all try and figure out who's going to which team, but certain analysts are better than others at figuring that out.
Yeah, so I found an article. It's on tapsportsnet.com, and it's something he's been calculating this for the past like 5 years. So I remember seeing it for the first time 5 years ago and being like, this is really cool. But it was obviously only 1 year
worth
of data that he started tracking. But at the what he does is he goes through, and at the end of a season, they go and get a number. You know, they have numbers for everything, but it's like they call it AV, but it's used heavily in this analysis. They described AV as putting a single numerical value on a player's season at any position from any year. So they go through all of their statistical numbers and put this AV number on players
at
the end of the season.
Which is called approximate value.
Approximate value of, yes, they just are grading this player pretty much for their season. So they take that, and they go through all of the draft picks, and they give them all their number that they are signed. And then he goes through and he calculates how accurate each of the people that make these mock drafts and compares it to the way they were actually drafted in the NFL draft.
So it's analytics based off of analytics.
Yes. It's a lot of information. If you read the article, though, it's honestly fascinating because it breaks it down by position. It breaks it down, like I said, right now he's done 5 years, so it's a five-year average that is being kind of calculated in this particular article. So I just figured it'd be kind of fun to go through some of the more accurate which of the analysts slash draft, because some of them are analysts, some of them are like consensus numbers, some are PFF, which is more of like a model number because they use statistics themselves there. But and it also breaks it down. So top 5, top 10, top 25, top 50, top 75, top 100, and then final. But it's really interesting because in the last 5 year, in the 5 year average for the top 100 big board rankings, The Athletic has been the most accurate, and that's over the NFL draft. So the way the NFL draft actually pans out and the way that these numbers, that these players are graded and where they are drafted, The Athletic has predicted
they're better than reality.
Better. Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wonder if teams have picked up on this to where they're talking to their scouts about what The Athletic is, you know, what their analytics say about players.
Yeah. They're like, have you seen the beast yet?
Because well, speaking of Dame Brugler, did you see this in this wonderful analysis? Dame Brugler is on his own. He's independent of this consensus. And he is ranked, I believe, fifth between Mel Kiper, DraftWire, Daniel Jeremiah. He was ranked 9th and 10th in terms of his top 5 and top 10 average over the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. But then he's 3, 3,
nails it
4.
For the rest.
Right. And I'm curious, when did he join The Athletic? Because, I mean, are we including him in the consensus or he is on his own?
And that's what I guess his is, because The Athletic, so many different people do their mock. So I'm assuming they kind of like we did our mock draft, our draft guide here, which is a consensus of 8 different people. But then you all each individually had your own. So I'm guessing Dane Brugler on his own had his top 5, top 10 that have not been so great, but he's really good when it comes to later. But that is piled into some of the other athletic people who probably are highly focused on that top 5, top 10. But I'll just go through some of this because, like I said, it was really interesting. So when you look at I'll say the order first. So the Athletic is the best in the last 5 year average, and then the NFL draft of how they actually are drafted. Behind that, it's Mel Kiper, DraftWire, Dane Brugler, Scouts Inc., Daniel Jeremiah, PFF, Lance Zierlein, and then the Draft Network. So if you guys are keeping in mind of which mock drafts to go read, this is helpful because it shows who's been accurate and at which level they've been the most accurate.
And I've got The Athletic, Daniel Jeremiah, and Mel Kiper's all picks for the Jaguars at 17 when we get ready for that.
Yes. So let's start with that. Let's start with, let's just say The Athletic. So when it goes through, and it goes through and breaks by position group too, for example. So what the most accurate and guessing position group for quarterback has been the NFL draft, the way that they've done it in the last 5 years. Next behind that has been Sunday Slate is something that was not included in that top. So it kind of ranks that The Athletic is fourth. So if you want to say, hey, let's see who's the most accurate for the quarterbacks the last 5 years, you're probably going to go look at The Athletic's guide because it seems like they're the most accurate in that. They're the most accurate in a lot of the things. But the NFL draft has nailed wide receiver, quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, safety. Those are their best categories. Mel Kiper's nailed tight end. And this is just one I'm going through one rankings. Athletic for running backs. The Athletic is number one. And then when you go to, like, the second best, because obviously the NFL draft itself holds a lot of the number ones for that. If you're going to second or third, The Athletic has been super accurate with tight end and offensive line, not so much with cornerbacks.
Okay,
we got to file that one away.
Yep.
Daniel Jeremiah has really good when it comes to defensive line, linebackers, safeties, corners, but has struggled big time when it comes to cornerbacks, wide receivers, and running backs.
Ah, all interesting.
Yeah.
So then we take all that, and then, like I said, I've got their picks for the Jaguars. We'll start with The Athletic, since we pretty much are crowning them as the queen bee in this conversation. So the Athletic's most recent mock draft has the Jaguars selecting a guy we have not talked about other than maybe briefly mentioning early last week. Defensive tackle out of Texas, Byron Murphy the second. Now, they, of course, acknowledge that the Jaguars did add Arik Armstead, but they still could use some explosion up the middle.
Like the conversation we were having about Josh Allen suggesting that they need to rotate guys. It can't just be you play this position and you play for 85% of the snaps. It needs to be, let's move you over here, let's move you over there, let's give you a little bit of a breather because now I need you to just get after the quarterback on the edge.
Yeah. Right. And as far as the mock draft from Mel Kiper, he has Mia's guy, and I only say Mia's guy.
So, just side note really quick, though, because that was The Athletics.
The
Athletics has is 10th when it comes to their defensive line picking and 8th in linebackers. So that is their weakest two positions that they've had the last 5 years, is guessing those ones.
Okay, interesting. Mel Kiper has the Jaguars taking, again, I say Mia's guy just because he went to Iowa, Cooper DeJean.
Right, which has been a name that's kind of gained traction, even hearing Nate Tice yesterday on the Athletic Football Show. Like, there's been – Cooper DeJean is a fascinating prospect because, yes, he played a lot of zone at Iowa, but he did – as much as he wasn't that star position, he played in a 4-2-5 lineup in Iowa's defense. And he's extremely disciplined in his approach. I believe he can play press man just because of what a freak athlete he is, and he showed that at his individual workout earlier this week or late last week, whenever it was. And so He's going to be an interesting one. I think the medicals have pretty much cleared for the most part. He obviously was able to participate in his pro day. I don't think he suffered the tibia injury that he had, that he suffered out of practice in November. I don't think it was one of those that, like, is going to derail his first year in the NFL. But for me, with Cooper DeJean, it's also the national discourse, not that national discourse, but the one surrounding, will he eventually have to move to safety?
Mm-hmm. And that's always a question. Yeah. And how has
so he has not
done?
Fared well in that. And okay. Those two, cornerback and safety, were his two. But so also keep it's not that they've predicted that they've gone and they've been wrong. It's that the talent that they have predicted at those two positions haven't panned out in the NFL very well.
Right, which is good to know. And finally, Daniel Jeremiah selects the guy I selected on the mock draft earlier this week with Las Vegas, Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver out of LSU. We all know about his speed with the 4.33 at the combine. He also caught the 17 touchdowns last season. That was the best in the country.
And that is Daniel Jeremiah's big board.
No, that is his mock draft.
His mock draft. Okay, so I think he'll have one more mock draft out next week, too. So it could change up there. Quick note from the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures from the 574, our guy in Indiana. The Athletic doesn't know that Byron Murphy has short arms. Probably missing that one.
And that is not Trent's thing. Just because I know two of the positions real quick that the Jags have been looking at. Obviously, we talk about wide receiver and we talk about corner. It seems like those are the two main ones we've really talked about. And so if you're looking for the most accurate who have been able to evaluate that talent that ends up working out into the NFL draft board is number one. But behind that, Scouts Inc., Dane Brugler, The Athletic, and Lance Zierlein have been the most accurate with wide receivers. And then when it comes to the defensive line slash edge, Daniel Jeremiah, PFF, Scouts Inc., Mel Kiper. And then when it comes to the cornerback, NFL draft, let's just go ahead and say this, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth most accurate the way that they've actually ended up drafting corners. The best has been Scouts Inc., Dane Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, and Sunday Slate are the most accurate when predicting those cornerback guys that are headed into the NFL.
Well, good stuff, Taylor. You did a lot of work, and I feel like the people listening appreciate all the work that this guy did as well. So that way they can just sit back and let us tell them who to take.
Yeah. And I did send the link to this article to a couple of you on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. If you want it, just hit us up at 641-1010. Also left it in the comments section of the YouTube chat line. And so if you're curious to see more the performance reports for the NFL draft analysts around the country, which one should you actually choose? Which should you not? Let us know. We'll make sure you get that link. This is Helmets and Heels.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010XL.
This is Helmets and Heels.
We mentioned the Durham Bulls scored 28 runs in a minor league baseball game earlier this week. I will refrain for Lauren's sake from noting how many runs Florida State scored in a single game.
I said it yesterday.
I know you did.
That doesn't bother me.
I just thought about
it. It's just baseball.
I know.
It just happens.
We wanted to give a shout out to all of our local baseball teams. So, hey, listen, Noles fans, you're feeling mighty fine right now.
Definitely there, because somebody on the text line when we were talking about who could go to Kentucky, they said, tell Kentucky we'll send Leonard Hamilton out their way. That
was I'm sure FSU fans are ready to part ways with him after the last 2 years have not been good. By the way, a little tease for our show tomorrow after we just broke down all of those potential players for the Jaguars that mock drafters have. I did do some digging into Dane Brugler's The Beast, which is one of my favorite publications that comes out once a year. And I have his summary for each of the players that we've discussed that could potentially come here. So I'll give you that breakdown tomorrow. So each player that we've, like I said, seen as far as mock drafts, I'll go through that with everyone tomorrow. But yes, when it comes to baseball, Link Jarrett is doing a terrific job at FSU, and the fact that he's been able to turn around, like I said, so quickly with so many guys that certainly were not on his team a season ago has been tremendous. And does it hurt my heart when FSU sweeps Florida for the first time since the year 2000? Yes, that does hurt my heart. However, I can acknowledge certainly that in the past, Florida's been really good. A season ago, almost won the national championship, but just lost to LSU. So
also, he abandoned Notre Dame and left us in the
dust. So Taylor may not be the biggest fan of Link Jarrett. Also in baseball, the Jumbo Shrimp won yesterday in their matinee 2-1 against Charlotte. They are back at it tonight, and it is, Taylor, a Coors Light Thirsty Thursday. First pitch, 7:05. So you know people are going to be excited for that. Speaking of FSU, the Noles are 27-5 on the season. They play host to Miami, so another rivalry. Had Florida in town on Tuesday, and now have Miami in town. Three-game series. That starts tonight. Usually they start on Fridays, but that one starts tonight at 7 p.m., so Noles fans, you can lock into that. Florida plays host to South Carolina with first pitch tomorrow night at 6:30. I'll be there on Saturday for the 4 o'clock game. Hopefully Florida can win. And then last night, UNF lost to Wofford 10-4. I had a client meeting this morning, and I saw Wofford's bus behind where the restaurant was. Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, I know where Wofford stayed last night after they beat UNF. And then UNF plays host to Lipscomb this weekend starting tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. And JU at Austin Peay, that is also tomorrow night. That one begins at 7 o'clock. So there is your your baseball local sports updates. And that's basically going to do it for us, ladies. We will, of course, keep you apprised on the station of Masters updates all day long. For RJ Saunders, for Taylor Dahl, for Mia O'Brien, I'm Lauren Brooks. Keep it right here on 1010X on 2.5 FM for XL Primetime. These heels are made for talking. We'll talk to you tomorrow.